This is 90.3 KEDM Public Radio. Good evening. I'm Corey Crow, and we're at Louisiana Delta Community College with a room full of folks and candidates who are running for Senate. And we've been talking to our candidates this evening, and I've got more questions for you this evening. So we'll start with Mr. Vinny Mendoza. Mr. Mendoza, where do you stand on the Second Amendment? And are there any limits that you think should be involved with gun ownership, and why?
Well, I support the Second Amendment. I own guns. All my family members own guns, and I served 20 years in the military. But I do feel uncomfortable if I go to Walmart and a guy is wearing a bazooka a gun machine with a magazine with 100 bullets. You know, I don't feel comfortable with someone wearing four or five guns in the store. You don't need to go that far. So there has to be a balance. You know, it's okay to carry your weapon and put it, you know, you don't need a big weapon to show off. You know, you don't show that you're a patriot wearing two or three guns. You show that you are a patriot when you serve your nation by going to the military. That's how you serve your nation. So we have to have a balance, and I'd be happy to address that.
Thank you. That is Vinny Mendoza. Mr. Antoine Pierce, that question goes to you. Where do you stand on the Second Amendment, and are there limits on guns that you would support, and why?
Well, I don't think anyone here is opposed to the Second Amendment. Obviously, I agree with the right to bear arms. But like you said, there has to be some limitations. For example, I support a ban on assault weapons. We had one, and it needs to be reinstated. You don't need an assault weapon to hunt with. What are you hunting, gnats? You know, you don't need that. Now, I think that any type of military-style weapon has no place on the streets. I think that people do have the right, but we have to put parameters around who can have these weapons and you know, to make sure that we're safe, to make sure that anyone that wants a gun can't go and get a gun. As a matter of fact, it's just really amazing to me that the Second Amendment is one of the only amendments we have that people are just like, you know what? No, just take it at its raw form. Don't put any parameters around it. It is what it is. Everybody have a gun, get a gun. It's the old West. And it's just absurd. We have to put measures in place to make sure that guns end up in the right hands.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce. Jean-Paul Bourgeois, a question goes to you. Your stance on the Second Amendment, where do you stand, and are there limits to gun ownership you would support, and why?
So, of course, I support the Second Amendment, and the argument that, well, it talks about the right of militia to own firearms, no. The Bill of Rights applies to individuals, and the Second Amendment is no exception to that. Now, I do completely support common sense legislation. I mean, in the 1930s, the NRA worked with Congress to put a ban on fully automatic weapons because we had a crime epidemic. So there is a middle road. There is a way of going forward. Now, that because the entire process has become so politicized, you know, we can't even do gun research. The CDC doesn't allow that. So I do think that there needs to be more research done, and any changes to the policy need to be evidence-based, based on that research. But if we don't look at the issue, we don't know what we don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Bourgeois. Mr. Dustin Murphy, that question goes to you. Where do you stand on the Second Amendment, and are there limits you would support on gun ownership, and why?
As Mr. Antoine Pierce said, there's some of us who believe it's in its raw form, shall not be infringed. And I believe that wholeheartedly. I'm probably an extremist in some of y'all's views, and that's okay. I own an AR military-style rifle. I use it for sporting. It's one of my favorite weapons in my closet, and I love to go out and shoot it whenever. I believe that the Second Amendment wasn't written about hunting. It was written about national defense. During World War II, they asked the general why they didn't attack the heartland, why they didn't attack the mainland when we were spread thin fighting across the fronts of Europe. And he said, because there would be a gun behind every blade of grass. And I don't think that that should change anytime soon. We should always be the last deterrent to a foreign army setting foot on, you know, on American soil.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Peter Winstrup, the question goes to you. Where do you stand on the Second Amendment, and are there limits on guns that you would support, and why?
I support the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms. I agree with 84% of Louisianans that we can close loopholes on restrictions around background checks, but in general, I support the Second Amendment. I do, with all due respect, Corey, wonder why this question comes up before questions about the near 1,000 people a day who are dying from a pandemic. This question comes before questions about millions of young people who are not in school because their parents are afraid and unsure of what to do and how to give them a high-quality education. And I actually think I know the answer, which is that it's an issue that politicians like to talk about. Politicians like us to be angry because that helps them raise money to put in their pockets. No one's taken away guns in 20 years and nobody's going to do it. We need to fight for education. We need to fight for the health of people in our community.
Thank you. That is Peter Winstrup. The next question goes to Mr. Antoine Pierce. Mr. Pierce, the CARES Act spent $2.2 trillion in an effort to jumpstart our national economy. If you're elected, how would you work to jumpstart Louisiana's economy?
Well, we passed the HEROES Act. We know that a lot of the resources in the CARES Act didn't get down to the people that it needed to. Still, in Louisiana, 400,000 people unemployed. Several small businesses and even large businesses have closed permanently. We're still lacking in testing. We're sending kids back to school without the proper sanitation in schools. People that are there's no stimulus in sight. People are looking at how they're going to pay their bills, they're facing eviction with no moratoriums. We pass the HEROES Act. We get money down to our local and state and local governments. We make sure that our postal service is functioning properly so that people can mail in their ballots and get their votes in on time. We strengthen our democracy by making sure that we put the money at the bottom where it belongs. We have a people-centered economy, and not putting. As a matter of fact, the state legislators just passed $157 million tax giveaway to the oil and gas industry. That is egregious in my mind.
Thank you, sir. That is Mr. Antoine Pierce. Mr. Jean-Paul Bourgeois, the CARES Act spent $2.2 trillion in an effort to jumpstart the national economy. If you're elected, how do you jumpstart Louisiana's economy?
Well, I think the aim of the CARES Act was misplaced. If it was to jumpstart the national economy in the middle of a pandemic, you know, that's completely misaligned. You know, during the second quarter, we lost, 34? The economy? The economy contracted by 34 GDP percentage? What we need to do and what we should have done is pay businesses to keep employees on their payrolls, 80% salary, and then whenever we are ready to reopen, we can have those people already still on the books. We don't have to go through this time-extensive hiring process, background checks, all this all over again. And that way we have people who are getting a regular income at a diminished level, but still better than the $1,200 they got one time. And so when we are ready to reopen, we can do so in a fully functioning, smart way.
Thank you, Mr. Bourgeois. Mr. Dustin Murphy, the CARES Act spent $2.2 trillion in an effort to jumpstart the national economy. If you're elected, how do you help jumpstart the economy?
By getting the government out of the way. This is just another failed attempt of good intention. The government thought that it could give everybody one big paycheck and everything would be okay, while the state governments kept their economies on lockdown. The federal government can do nothing that supersedes the state. The states are sovereign. So giving a bunch of people money didn't help anything. And then they gave $340 billion in absolute waste to the arts. May be important, but during a pandemic, the arts should be the last thing you're advocating for financing. We gave over $1 trillion to airlines, and then we turn around and give $600 billion to PPP loans to small businesses. The other side to it is Those airlines are only responsible for about 70% of the money we gave to them. That's our tax money. PPP loans must be paid back in full, and all it did was prolong the suffering our small businesses in this state received. And the legislatures had the control to open the state back up and give people the right to operate their businesses as they see fit. As a senator, you can't make that kind of legislation, but you can change the narrative.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Peter Winstrup, the CARES Act spent $2.2 trillion in an effort to jumpstart the national economy. If you're elected, how do you jumpstart the economy in Louisiana?
First, we are the greatest country in the world, and it is time we act like it. We can come together and defeat this virus right away so that people can open up and get back to work. Second of all, 10 years ago, when Bill Cassidy was in Congress, he voted to bail out Wall Street and large corporations and then cut the support before millions of people got back to work. We can't afford to do that again. You know, we talked about giving money to folks. I think we misread that. When you give money to folks, what you're doing is you're putting money in small businesses. Because when working people who are out of a job have money to spend, then small businesses compete and innovate to serve those people. We fuel our economy. We need 3 months of stimulus while we build a national infrastructure jobs program to do things like we talked about, expand rural broadband, to upgrade our infrastructure systems, to upgrade our ports, and put people back to work until there is certainty and the private sector can take over.
Thank you, Mr. Winstrup. Mr. Vinny Mendoza, the CARES Act spent $2.2 trillion in an effort to jumpstart our national economy. If you're elected, how do you jumpstart Louisiana's economy?
Well, first of all, we have to keep in mind that the CARES Act was basically catered to the large corporations. They are the ones that benefited from it by 80%. And I believe that if I'm elected, the first week I get to Washington, I'm going to start working on a stimulus package that will cater the individual people, a check for 6 months, a $1,200 check for a stimulus check for 6 months, and also help the small businesses with less than 20 employees. That's how we can rebuild the economy, when we take care of the small businesses and the people. They're the ones that need, not the large corporations.
Thank you, Mr. Mendoza. Mr. Bourgeois, I just wrote down, is America broken right now? What issues can both sides work towards to get through the gridlock in Washington?
So I don't believe there's anything as a partisan issue. I mean, you know, you asked about the ACA earlier. You know, healthcare affects all Americans. It doesn't matter if you're Democratic or Republican. COVID-19, it affects all Americans. It doesn't care if you're a red state or a blue state. So I think that the basic acknowledgement that, you know, we're all in this together, we are still the United States and we need to act united. And now the powers that be, and especially the two-party system, reinforces this dialogue, this conversation of animosity, this vilification of the other side. Because if you demonize the other side, then you feel so strongly in your position that you are willing to defend it, even if you know that it's wrong. So that's why I am running as a no-party candidate. I think that the two-party system is broken, not America, and we need to move beyond that dialogue and actually incorporate people and talk to them at their basic fundamental roots about what they think is great about America.
Thank you, Mr. Bourgeois. Mr. Dustin Murphy, is America broken, and what issues can both sides work towards to break D.C. gridlock?
I actually agree with almost everything Mr. Bourgeois said. I'm a Republican, but I do believe that the two-party system was never intended. It was, the Constitution never listed out two parties. It should have never stayed two parties, but we let two parties gerrymander districts and to set up strongholds in which they knew they could win, and it became more about maintaining power than representing Americans. And we see it today with the arguments. They're all superficial. Behind closed doors, these people really don't disagree on a lot. It's all about maintaining the status quo, maintaining power. And I think to fix it is we just got to get back to just being Americans. The American spirit used to unify us, you know, and we've seen it like with Dr. King, it come from all races. It wasn't one race. It was everyone come together. It was no division. Everything is so superficial and so overblown. And if you turn on your TV, all you're going to see is the negative about one another. And that's not right. That's not the Christian thing to do. It's not the American way.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Peter Winstrup, is America broken? And what issues can both sides work towards to break D.C.'s gridlock?
When you ask whether America is broken, it depends on who you define America as. And is America what we see in Washington and what we see on TV? Or is America folks like my students who are working hard every day to better themselves? Is America the mother who is working hard to provide her family with an education with a roof over their head? Is America the welders who are working hard to build our country and build our future? So America is not broken because our people are not broken. However, we have, as people mentioned, not only political inequality with dollars going to Washington and with incentives rigged toward donors, but we have economic inequality that is preventing each person in America to making free choices about their life, to having agency in their dreams, in their pursuit of a small business or an education.
Thank you, Mr. Winstrup. Mr. Mendoza, is America broken, and what issues can both sides get together and work on to break gridlock in D.C.?
Our federal government is broken. It's controlled by corporations. It's controlled by contributions. And we have a majority party that does whatever they want. So we need to have a balance. And I believe the best way to create balance is by electing more independents. If you send me to Washington, what's going to happen? There's not going to be a majority party anymore. We're going to have a balance. So I'm going to fight for the people, not for the corporations. Everything that runs Washington is greed and power. And everything happens because of the contributions. Those that give contributions, they feel that the politicians owe something to them. And they cash in on them, on it. So that's why I'm not accepting any contributions.
Thank you, Mr. Mendoza. Mr. Antoine Pierce, is America broken, and what issues can both sides get together and work on to break the gridlock in D.C.?
The answer is no, America isn't broken. The system isn't broken. The system is working exactly the way it was designed. Every single person up here is running to be a part of that system, whether we like it or not. We're just going to be individual decision makers, 1 out of 100 in the U.S. Senate. But we're running to be a part of that system. We can cast down the government as being broken all we like, but it's not. It's working, but it's just not working for the people it should be. And that's the problem. So it doesn't matter what party you run on. There's no middle button. The only thing in Congress, the only thing in the middle of the road here is white stripes and dead armadillos. There's no yay, it's yay or nay when you get to Congress. It doesn't matter what party you run on. If you choose no party, independent Democrat, it's about your heart and what you want to do. Because all of us want to be a part of this system, and all of us are running to make a decision in this, to be decision-makers in this system. So you have to understand policy and the effects it has on our communities, it has on our country, and it has on our state. And that's why I'm running.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Murphy, next question goes to you. Education in the 21st century is our topic. The coronavirus has exposed inequity in education. If you get to Washington, how do you help education?
By getting the federal government out of it. We try to use a blanket statement and say that all kids are the same. It's the no kids left behind. No, all kids are different. All kids learn at a different pace. And the federal government is a terrible decider of what pace kids learn at. You know, our teachers here in the state, our local school districts know what our kids need more than anyone else in this country. I would trust them with my kids. I do trust them with my kids. Why? I don't trust a federal bureaucrat to make decisions for my children here at home. I believe we need to give the power of our curriculum back to our local school districts and handle COVID. COVID's a real thing, but it's not affecting all communities the same. We can't treat all communities the same. We have to treat them individual. We're all individual. Exceptionalism is what built this nation. It's what makes us great, is that we can all be different in our own way. So to treat all kids the same and expect them to learn and educate the same is a terrible philosophy that's been broken for a long time.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Peter Winstrup, the coronavirus has exposed inequity in education. How does electing you help?
Well, we've tried a lot of different, we've tried politicians that wanted to cut funds and raise funds and do this and that, but we've never tried sending a teacher to the Senate, so that would help. Every person in this room knows the power of an influential teacher who led them to a dream, who opened doors, who allowed them to see something in themselves that they did not see. And that's why we need to invest in our teachers. I would move teachers at the biggest line item budget in our education fund to the federal government, funded at a progressive basis based on the child poverty rate of the district. Then we are investing in the people who will make the change. And then we do what Mr. Murphy says, and we cut a lot of what the federal government currently does, and we move those decisions, as he said, to parishes and to teachers, so that folks close to home, we are attracting and retaining the best and brightest teachers, and we are giving them the freedom to serve our students, and we're giving families choices about what they want for their young people.
Thank you, Mr. Winstrup. Mr. Vinnie Mendoza, sir, the coronavirus has exposed inequity in education. If you're elected, how do you help?
Well, COVID-19 has put the nation upside down. You know, not only children are the ones getting infected with COVID-19. Everybody's getting infected everywhere. But you know, it comes from the top. It comes from the White House. Negligence from the White House. They're responsible for 7.5 million Americans having contracted the COVID-19. The president, when he started going out without masks, he infected a lot of Secret Service agents, and they in turn infected a military unit in Maryland, a National Guard, including two of my sons. And now the national defense is in jeopardy because about 25% of the people are in quarantine.
Thank you, Mr. Mendoza. Mr. Antoine Pierce, the question goes to you. The coronavirus has exposed inequity in education. If you're elected, how do you help?
Well, first we have to address the structural racism that has persisted in our educational system. Why we see predominantly minority communities, particularly African-American communities, have far lower educational achievement. Why our educational gap continues to widen despite COVID. But we also have to make an investment in those communities on a federal level, making sure that specifically communities with people with disabilities, have the federal funding necessary to be successful. But we have to also address the inequities that have persisted for years. You're starting students off at the 50-yard line, some students at the 50-yard line and some students at the end zone. We can close that gap with the adequate funding. We can close that gap if we pay attention to it and make sure that we're listening to those communities and seeing what they need, making sure that they have high quality, putting rural broadband in those communities, making that type of investment, making sure that those kids have laptops and proper technology.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce. Mr. Bourgeois, the question goes to you. The coronavirus has exposed inequity in education. If you're elected, how do you help?
So I think if we're talking about education during the corona period, it was briefly mentioned and other candidates have talked about it, it's the issue of access to broadband internet. And quite frankly, we're not seeing that the free market is stepping up. In fact, they are creating an oligarchy amongst themselves so that one provider goes into a community and they set the price. And because there's no competition, then no other people have access to it. There's no price comparisons. And, you know, businesses don't have the incentive to go in because, well, someone's already there. It'll hurt both of them. So if they make backroom agreements about who gets which communities, they can keep service low and they can keep prices high. The way to address this is by treating the internet as a utility, by implementing net neutrality. These are all issues that, for some reason or another, have not been addressed this campaign cycle. But really, they are issues that are especially important during COVID-19 and the educational crisis we're seeing.
Thank you, sir. That is Mr. John Paul Bourgeois. One more question before we get to closing statements, and I'm going to call this the lightning round. So if I can just get a short answer from you, give me three things that you would fix in Louisiana's infrastructure if you're sent to Washington. Mr. Peter Winstrup, you're up first.
Upgrading our electrical transmission systems, expanding rural broadband, and improving our ports with infrastructure projects.
Thank you. Mr. Mendoza, three things, if you go to Washington, you would fix about the infrastructure.
You know, fix the roads, the bridges, and light rail system.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Antoine Pierce, three things.
Oh, they took my answers. I was sitting back here thinking, definitely the roads and bridges, certainly our electrical infrastructure, but also, yeah, like he said, also our ports, and I was thinking about that because I'm from South Louisiana, too, so our ports, for sure.
Thank you. Mr. John Paul Bourgeois, three things in Louisiana's infrastructure you would work on if sent to Washington.
The levee system, broadband internet, and railroads.
All right. Mr. Dustin Murphy, three things infrastructure-wise.
As much as I would like to just give an answer, we all understand that that's not a priority of the Senate. That's the state legislature, and it's up to the state where that money goes, except for I-20 and I-10, I-49, which are interstate corridors. That's the only things we would be allowed to fix. So it would be roads and bridges that would receive federal funding. Everything else would fall under the state's jurisdiction.
Thank you, sir. And that concludes our questions. We're going to take a very short break, come back with our closing statements. You're listening to 90.3 KEDM Public Radio. It's our Meet the Candidate Forum.